All right. We will get started, and I would like to call to order the regular monthly meeting of the Board of Respiratory Care Examiners at 9 o'clock on June 21st, 2018. Just as a reminder, we are a professional board, and so when we are talking, we ask that you not be talking out there, and for anyone who's coming up to the table, we will give you that same courtesy. Also a reminder to please turn your cell phones off or down or on vibrate because we are in a location where we do get cell service now, unlike our last one, so we don't want any of those interruptions. One last call for CEUs. The paper was just picked up. Everyone's on it? Okay. Everyone has to remain here for the entirety of the meeting. We will start with introductions, and my name is Tracy Kagan, and I'm chair of the board.
I'm Jose Gonzalez, vice chair.
Michelle O'Hare Schattenberg, board member.
Kathy Rainier, board member.
Alan Crawford, board member.
Jack Crawford, executive director.
Assistant Attorney General Francisca Neckberg, attorney for the board.
Charlotte Muhammad, administrative assistant.
Kathy Stone, licensing administrator.
And board members, if you haven't already, please make sure your microphones are turned on. It should be flashing.
Hit the button.
Hit the button. Hit the button right in front.
In the front.
There you go. Yep. All right. Good. You're on. All right. We will start with approval of the consent agenda, which includes items C1 up to and including C8.
And I'm sure I'll move that we accept the consent agenda as stated.
A second.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion? All in favor of approval of the consent agenda, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes. All right.
Madam Chair, so our next meeting is July 19th. I just want to make sure we check that with everybody's calendars, because traditionally we've had some vacation stuff going on in July. Everybody's okay with July 19th?
I'm good with July. Yeah.
Great, thank you.
All right, well, we will get started with the regular agenda, and since we had one person who signed in, I will go ahead and start there. So we're going to start with R3, which is consideration in action on investigations of possible unprofessional conduct, and the board will call the case of Jasmine Franco Corona, case C003881-18-012271.
Good morning.
Good morning. You can just grab another chair
from
the side there.
Thank you for coming down. Can we have some introductions?
Sure. I'm Attorney Zach Hornley, and this is Jasmine Franco Corona.
Board members, this is case number C003881-18-012271. The respiratory care practitioner, Jasmine Franco Corona. She's been licensed with us since February 2017, and her license is currently set to expire December 1st of 2018. Last employer reported was Mercy Gilbert Medical Center. We do not have any complaint history, and there is no PACER history that's available online. RCP Franco Corona was arrested on March 29th and charged with two criminal counts of DUI. The board received a written report on April 26th of 2018. Specifically, Ms. Franco Corona was arrested in Gilbert by the Gilbert Police Department at approximately 109 hours, was stopped for speeding at the intersection of Greenfield and Mesquite and Gilbert. The officer conducted a DUI investigation, and she was arrested for DUI in the slightest degree and DUI drugs or metabolites. Ms. Corona Franco, Franco Corona did respond to the allegations and basically told us that she was arrested. At the time, she was 100% sober. The arresting officer believed I was under the influence of something due to my red eyes, but I can assure you I was not. When the blood work comes back, it will confirm that the breathalyzer was negative as well. My lawyer called Gilbert Police Department and determined that there were no pending charges at this time. I have been told that this was just harassment, it's not a felony. And she goes on to say that she apologizes for reporting this late. I don't have any further as far as the summary. This is an initial allegation. This is the first time the board has reviewed this matter. You can dismiss it, issue a letter of concern, offer a non-disciplinary consent agreement, or move it to the next process, next step in the review, which would be an informal interview.
Great. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
This is her first offense.
This is her first offense that we're aware of.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here. Where we are at this stage, you will have 5 minutes to tell us anything and everything you want us to know. At that point, the board will have conversation with themselves with nothing back and forth with you.
Sure. So at this point, I think that what we would like the board to know is that Ms. Franco is, and I think it's already been mentioned, she has no prior disciplinary history. And as already also been mentioned, there are no current charges. So this has been an investigation from Gilbert since the start, since she was pulled over, since she was arrested. But there are no current charges, and her purpose for having us aboard has been to monitor that and see where that may or may not go. Currently there are no current charges, and we don't expect that there will be charges from this. Ms. Franco is extremely conciliatory towards the board, and she wants to do whatever it takes to make sure that she maintains her livelihood. She's willing to do, I believe you refer to them as CEUs. We call them something different in the legal world, but she's willing to do to take classes for that and get more credits for ethics or whatever the board feels is appropriate. At this point, I think what we would ask for is that it either be dismissed or that she be maybe ordered, like we mentioned, to complete some CEUs to account for this. She did also, as was also mentioned already, self-report. She did late, but she realized, hey, she didn't realize there was a timeline. As soon as she did, she called and made sure she did that on her own. And there was nobody that came to her and said, hey, you haven't reported this. So she is attempting to do everything that she can to make things right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Board members?
I think the only thing we have to work with right now is the late reporting.
I agree.
Can I just ask for clarification?
Sure.
No charges ever filed.
That's correct.
Just as an FYI, your reporting statute is 32-3208. That 10 days starts ticking down at charges once they're charged.
So if she's never charged.
She's not late reporting.
As an estate arrest.
Yeah, doesn't it? It doesn't say arrest. We arrest him.
Nope. It's in the back of your orange book.
So it does say on page 13.
Who's been charged with a misdemeanor or any conduct that may affect patient safety?
Page 13, number 2, this letter that was addressed April 27th, 2018.
So what page are you?
32-3208 requires mandatory reporting of an arrest or charge.
Mm-hmm.
Which, sorry, what page are you on?
13.
13 of the packet?
Per PDF that happens.
Should my number off?
Yeah, well, if you're on, yeah, if you're online, the number
you I just want to make sure that the statute 32-3208 reads.
32-3208 in its actual form reads charged.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. With this being her first offense, believe in the traditional has been to help the courts manage this.
Well, we don't even know what's going to happen. Because apparently there's something filed in Gilbert. I mean, that doesn't mean that it won't be if there's something that comes back.
We don't have any blood work or anything with us
now. That doesn't come back.
Right.
And Frankie, may I just go to a little further into what you have asked?
To what I have asked, yes.
Okay. So So at the scene, she was never cited, which would essentially be the charge.
The charge form, on the short form.
Exactly. At this time, there's been no law form, and so therefore, there hasn't been any charges. So I just wanted to make sure that
they haven't dismissed the investigation either.
No, and in terms of a misdemeanor, they have in a year to investigate prior to the statute of limitations kicking in. So essentially, they would have an entire 365 days from the time that they had stopped her to continue to investigate or to bring charges.
So the board has a couple options in this case. You can either dismiss this, and should she be charged on the long form, her 10 days would start again, and she would actually have to report that as a charge. So you could dismiss this without prejudice. However, you can also table this and keep it open pending the outcome of the investigation. But that's completely up to the board and Jack's timetable.
Right, right. The only reason I don't is because I don't know that our decision is going to be different based on what they do as a first offense.
I agree.
I think in the interest of finality, as much as it can be with something that's dismissed without prejudice, I just think we dismiss it. I would move that we dismiss this without prejudice.
And okay,
if
so we
something
have a motion.
Happens, then we can take it.
We have a motion. Do we have a second for
I'll
dismissal?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? And I agree with that. And then it becomes her responsibility. If she is charged at some point, she then has to notify us. Otherwise, we're right back here. Well, we're back here anyway. But
right.
Okay, so all in favor of dismissal of the case of Ms. Franco Corona, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes. Okay, you are set. Good luck.
And just so you know, if you are charged, just make sure you can do these days when you actually are charged to report that back.
So I did see a few people walk in, and is it anybody who is on the agenda for the day?
You're on the agenda?
Did you sign in on the right sheet?
I signed both of my names.
That's R33.
Is there anyone else in here who is on the agenda?
Three, right? One and three are both here.
Okay. All right. So we will stay in R3, consideration and action on investigations of possible unprofessional conduct, and the board will call the case of Christopher Jones, case C003878-18-011884.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number C003878-18-011884. RCP Jones has been licensed with us since March 28, 2016. His license is currently set to expire on February 24th of 2020. His last reported employer with us was Banner Desert Medical Center. We do not have a complaint history, and there is no criminal history online that was found. This complaint involves a report from Sunview Health and Rehab. They filed a complaint against RCP Jones for patient abandonment on March 30th of 2018. The complaint goes on to state that this is a formal written complaint against licensee Christopher Jones for patient abandonment. On February 26th of 2018 at approximately 6:18 p.m., RCP Jones sent a text to the respiratory director, Rico Major. Text message stated that Christopher had, and this is in quotes, an emergency came up and I have to leave. I'll split up assignment. Upon further investigation, it was found that Christopher stated that he was leaving his shift in order to go work at another facility, a Banner facility. Regardless of his reason, Christopher came to Sunview for a shift, took report and responsibility of his patients, and decided he needed to leave without anyone to cover his patient load, nor did he pass report to any RT who was in the building. Enclosed are two statements from therapists who had interactions that evening with Christopher and a photocopy of a screenshot of a text message. We are formally requesting investigation disciplinary action to take place. In response, R.C.P. Jones responded to the complaint on April 2nd via email. He states, I called in the office to ask about the complaint. I was working at Sunview the night shift at the time. I arrived for work, and just after getting a report, I had a scheduling issue where I couldn't work that night. I called and texted my director, Rico, of Sunview and Rehab. He told me that it was unacceptable, and he fired me via text. I spoke to my fellow co-workers and handed them my assignments of my patients. I clocked out and left the building. I was informed I had to return my radio, or I would be billed for it. I mailed in my badge and radio a few days later. I gave report to another therapist before I left, verbal and written. We don't have anything further as far as the initial allegation. This is an initial allegation. The board can dismiss, issue a letter of concern, offer a non-disciplinary consent agreement, or send it to another step of review process, which would be a formal interview.
Okay, thank you. Real quickly, for those of you who are on the agenda, once your case has been seen, you can stay, but you don't have to stay. The only ones who have to stay are the ones who are here for CEUs. Thank you for being here, Mr. Jones.
Christopher Jones, thanks for having me.
Just like the last one, you will have 5 minutes to tell us anything and everything you want us to know about this specific information incident. And then after that, we will talk to each other with no conversation back and forth to you.
Okay. So I got on a shift around 5:53, clocked in, went to the office, got my assignment, went to my patient therapist, took report, and then a few minutes later, my phone rang from Banner, saying I was on shift, and Banner's my full-time position, and I can't work two places at once. Banner's full-time, Sunday is my PRN job, so I gave report to the person next to me, and then asked for advice. Said, get a hold of Director Rico, and I did, and I told him, I can't work here today, and then he pretty much fired me, text message said, and then I went to Banner.
Anything else?
That's about it.
Okay. Board members.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
I know I can't ask him.
No, you can't ask him.
So as I was reviewing the documents that were attached, a couple of things. One, I have concerns with the fact that you're accepted the assignment that you already have. And you're responsible then once you've received that report. However, I don't know that. I know there was in a letter from the facility, it stated that there was abandonment concerns. He never abandoned his patients. He contacted his director, who at 6:18 p.m., who responded at 6:26 p.m., and the director's response was, this is not acceptable, Christopher. It's way too busy. So that indicates to me that they had a pretty heavy workload that night. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but I have to let you go. Make sure that you turn in your radio so they don't charge you for it. So he fired him 8 minutes after he sent the text message to his director. His director fired him. Once you've been fired, why would you stay and take on the rest of your assignment?
No,
so I don't call that abandonment. You fired him. So I actually think we need to speak to Mr. Rico, because if they were so busy at 6:26 p.m., if they were so busy, did Mr. Rico bring in additional RCP staff to cover this busy workload? Or did he create a predicament where we now have patients who are not being treated?
Busy is a relevant term. And not relevant right here. That's a relative term. Busy to you, busy to him, busy to me is different. But it has nothing to do...
Well, my question would be, though, if RCP Christopher has a workload that he accepted, he then informs his boss that I have to leave. Mm-hmm. His boss then turns it around and fires him. Mm-hmm. I have a couple questions. Who's covering those patients that he's now... no longer responsible for because he's been fired?
And a good question, but has nothing to do with his case right here. His case is about, did he abandon his patients?
No. In my opinion, he did not.
I agree, he didn't. He was fired. And you're not abandoning your patients once you've been terminated.
Well, from the staff perspective, and I apologize for interrupting, we've asked for additional documentation for Sunview as far as the patient records that were at issue that he had taken report for, because we wanted to review if there was a gap in patient care. We haven't received those records yet. I followed up a couple times within the last few weeks, and I still won't have them in hand. As far as from my perspective, and I'm not an RP, I think we need more information to make the call that you're talking about, and it's not necessarily in hand in the investigative file at this point in time. One of the questions I would like to ask is, where was he when he got his text? 8 minutes later, was he in the facility or had he already left? Because when I look at the fact pattern, he had already decided he was leaving no matter what happened.
The licensee?
Yeah.
What time did he file?
We don't have that. Those are the questions that...
All right, well, that does make a difference in the situation. If he clocked out before or after he received...
I want to know if he clocked out after 6:26 p.m.
I don't remember.
What's that?
I don't
remember. We'd have to see the documents.
Yeah, we have
for
to see
that.
The documents.
Because that does change the picture.
I just don't have the answers to all the questions that you're asking, and I have tried to obtain that information. Just hasn't come forth. I haven't gotten it yet.
Okay, so how about, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Maybe we move this on, and in the meantime, request additional documentation from the facility. The thing that concerns me, number one, I get in the same position, too, where I work at multiple places. I have a triple redundant calendaring system. And in 9 years of doing what I do, I have never mixed up my assignments. So that's one of the issues I have. His statement here today indicates he gave report to LEAP. Well, we have a statement from LEAP saying, or at least in general, not corroborating what the licensee has said today. So that's my suggestion. I guess I'll make it a motion to move it to an informal and request the additional documentation be gotten from the facility.
Do we have a second? We have a motion and a second to go to an informal interview. Any discussion? Is there anything else that we would like Jack to try and get?
Patient records, and I actually think an interview with Mr. Tang, Leap Tang, whose memories and question here, it conflicts with what the licensee said.
Okay.
If there's anything you can add.
I was wondering if maybe that text was available from you're still available through Banner that requested him coming to work. If he's a full-time staffer.
He said that was a phone call.
Yeah, that was a phone call.
It wasn't a text.
He said it's one way.
Maybe we can find out who it was.
Maybe from Banner.
I don't know if that makes any difference.
I don't really think that makes a difference. He just gets a phone call, and this is what he said the phone call was about. So.
I'm curious.
Anything else you want from Jack?
Well, I'm just curious to know. So, did somebody come in to take care of the patients?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that we can find out now with patient record information.
Right.
I had talked to, and I got to pull the file with the notes, but I talked to somebody there, and they told me, I didn't send a subpoena out in this case because they told me that they were forthcoming. And so this time we'll send out a subpoena, and I guess do one other interview with one of the people that's in the documentation, and we'll bring that back to the board when it's available.
Okay. All right, so we had the motion, we had a second, we had discussion. Is there any further discussion? All in favor of moving the case of Christopher Jones to an informal interview, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes.
So, RSP Jones, this is getting sent to what's called an informal interview. You'll receive a notice of that in the future, and staff's going to do a little more work to get additional documentation. Thank you for coming down today. Appreciate it.
Moving on, the board will call the case of Elvis Mustafic, case C003883-18-008-866. Good morning. What about board materials?
I'm navigating to board materials.
It's 315. I've been looking for a page.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number C003883-18-008866. RCP Elvis Mustafik holds license number 008866. He's been licensed with the board since October 23rd of 2002. That license, and that's a typo, is set to expire on June 18th of 2019. His last reported employer is ISIS Healthcare. We do have a complaint history. We do not have any other criminal arrests or information that showed up on the PACER report. RCP Mustafik was arrested on March 31st, 2018 and charged with four criminal counts of DUI and one civil traffic violation. The board received the self-report on May 18th of 2018. In summary, RCP Mustafik was arrested on March 31st. They did do a blood draw. Those results came back positive at 0.202 plus or minus 0.011 grams of ethanol per 100 milliliters. The Tempe Police Department's Officer Robinson's report states that he was arrested on March 31st around 04:12 hours for driving under the influence of liquor near the Denny's located on 48th Street in Tempe. RCP Mustafik was seen unconscious in the driver's seat of the vehicle in the roadway at 48th Street. His vehicle had collided with the median curb located at University Drive, 48th Street. And upon his initial contact, the officer detected odor of intoxicating beverages on his breath and body. RCP Mustafik's eyes were bloodshot and watery. He was transported to the Tempe City Jail where he was processed for DUI and released without incident. In his response to the board, he states, on March 31st, I was detained and ticketed for driving under the influence on the night of March 30th. He states, I was out with friends celebrating instead of arranging transportation as I normally do. I was too intoxicated to use my good and responsible judgment and got in my car to drive. I didn't make it past two blocks before I ran into the median lane and my car stopped. I was unable to reignite it and fell asleep in my car. Luckily, there was no collision or another vehicle, or were there injuries to me or anybody else. The Tempe Police Department was called and detained me from my car and to the station. I have no words to express my sincere regret for my possible lack of judgment, and now my impeccable record has been called into question. This is my first such offense. I promise my very last. I will never place myself in a situation to make decisions when I'm in inebriated condition. I am working with my attorney to resolve it judicially, and now I ask for forgiveness as well as for an opportunity to do better. If you need any more information or concerns, I hope you give me a chance to address them. We have one issue in the licensee's history. There's a consent agreement for findings of fact, conclusions, law, and an order for non-disciplinary civil penalty that was issued in 2017, and that was for working four shifts without a license. RCP Mustafik is here to address the board. This is an initial allegation. The board can dismiss, issue a letter of concern, offer non-disciplinary consent agreements, or send us to an informal interview if the officer's disciplinary action that's merited.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for being here. You will also have 5 minutes. Tell us anything and everything you want us to know. After that, the board will talk to each other with no conversation back and forth to you.
Thank you. Let me just say first and foremost that it's very difficult for me to be in this situation before you, and I apologize for the circumstance, and not only for the obvious reasons, but because this offense is such
so against my character and my record that it hurts me personally. Of course, since I was of legal age, I've never had any, not only such, but any allegations or troubles with the law. And I am in court now resolving it. From somebody who survived the Civil War and came to a foreign country, let me just say this has been one of the most difficult times of my entire life. And I'm already paying for the consequences, rightfully so. Not only because my professionalism has been called in question and therefore I'm here before you, but also my record as a citizen. I don't have any excuse about my behavior, just abject apologies and promises that I will never put myself or you, ladies and gentlemen, in this position again.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions just for clarification on the initial allegation document. It states that RCP Mustafic was licensed since 2002. Is that accurate? When did he graduate school? And then it said that his license expires in 2009. So does he have a current expired license?
2019, I thought I had tried to correct that. I think that's a typo.
So does he have a current license today?
Yep. So RCP Mustafic graduated from Pima Medical Center on August 4th, 2008.
And 2019 is the actual expiration?
Yes.
Okay.
That doesn't include... See, what's the initial licensing date, correct?
Is that right?
He was originally issued, his license was originally issued on June 18th of 2009. So that coincided with graduation date from Pima Medical.
Of 2008, yep. What else, board members?
Well, obviously we have a failure to report because he was charged the night he was.
Correct. We definitely have that.
And if the information is correct on as far as criminal history is concerned, this appears to be a first offense, which traditionally we've left to the courts to handle. So let me move to offer a non-disciplinary consent agreement for a civil penalty of $250 for failure to timely report.
Payable within,
let's see, 60 days?
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Do we have any further discussion?
I just have a question. I can't find anything that says the court's made any determination, so I'm assuming
they haven't.
Not.
Okay. They haven't.
So.
You good? Or you have a conversation?
Yeah.
Okay. All in favor of offering a non-disciplinary consent for a civil penalty of $250 payable within 60 days, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes.
So the board's decided they're going to offer you a non-disciplinary consent agreement for failing to report this within 10 days. And the fine is $250.
And I guess I should have said,
yes.
And I'm sorry, amending my motion to add if it's not paid or not signed, then we move to an informal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do we need to amend that whole thing, or
we're kind of good with that? Standard practice of staff.
Standard practice.
Okay. So, I usually try to say that.
Me too.
So the $250 is for not recording. That would resolve the case if you choose to sign. If you don't choose to sign, I'll go to another to inform you. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Good luck to you. All right. We are going to jump back up to R2, consideration and action on informal interviews. And the board will call the case of Barbara Regis, case C003865-18-000482.
C003875-18-00130. RCP Barbara Regis holds license number 1300. I have her original license being issued in 1996, and it's currently set to expire on January 3rd of 2020. Her last reported employer was Maryville Hospital. Did not find any complaint history with the board, and no PACER information was found in the public record. RCP Regis failed a random continuing education audit. She has not replied to the original audit and not replied to the complaint or allegation. She was invited to this meeting in writing and by email. And if memory serves, I believe we've had some return mail from her as far as both the email and regular mail.
The statement of the case indicates she's contacted the board by phone?
Early on, that's correct.
All right.
She had contact where I talked with her. In synopsis, I'm going to try to relay what she had told me back then. And basically, I don't think Maryville Hospital is operating anymore.
Correct.
She had been employed there for a very long time. And she had mentioned that she wasn't going to seek any more employment after that and was basically not practicing respiratory care anymore. She didn't tell me that she was leaving the state or anything like that, but she said she was pretty much done with the profession. That's the type of information she had relayed to me.
Okay.
Well. Did she ask to surrender her license or have it moved to be inactive or anything?
No. And if memory serves, this conversation, and I don't have my notes, but this conversation happened when the original audit went out. And we had one or two conversations even before this case even came up. I think she asked for if we had an inactive or retired status, which we don't. And it was at the very beginning of this case or just before this case.
So in April, we sent out a consent agreement, or we voted to send a consent. We haven't heard anything since then.
No.
Yeah, you can't just leave things in limbo and hope that they go away. That's not how things work.
When did the hospital close?
December.
Fourth quarter last year. It was the fourth quarter.
Okay.
So somewhere November, December.
She would have had two.
She was zero.
So lots of other places.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And more importantly, you can't just leave your license in limbo like that. This is your license. This is your livelihood.
Well, I think from what Jack says, she's pretty much, come to the conclusion that she's done. So
I mean, you can tell by her license number that she's been around quite some time.
Yes.
No, I'm just saying, she's been around a long time, and she, in fact, may very well be ready to retire or move on to
she might be.
Some other lifestyle, but she still can't, ignore it.
Yeah.
So I guess we're at the informal, and she didn't show up, so the next step is a formal.
Yep.
So I'll so move. Formal. Gary?
We have a motion and a second to go to a formal hearing. We have any discussion? All in favor of taking the case of Barbara Regis to a formal hearing, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes. The board will now call the case of Bethany Vieira, case C003822-18-010719.
Is RCP Vieira here? Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number C003822-18-010719 concerning RCP Bethany Vieira. RCP Vieira self-reported a DUI charge on November 2nd of 2017. If the board recalls, this is a case where there was an arrest for DUI liquor and DUI illegal drugs on January 16th of 2016. And Mesa Prosecutor's Office did not file a long form until November 2nd. I'm sorry. I don't have the date of the filing, but it was a year or so after the original arrest. At the time of the initial arrest, an officer Warren from the Mesa Police Department had evaluated her, and that revealed that her breath tested a .051 for alcohol, that she exhibited indicators of drug and alcohol impairment. RCP Vieira did not provide a response to the initial complaint notification, but in her self-report to the board, she states that I was arrested for DUI in Gilbert, Arizona. I have not been convicted of the charges. I have future court date of that is not.
Well, I think that doesn't make sense.
No.
That's not correct. I'm sorry. Let's get so the, as far as the board history, RCP Vieira does not have any prior complaint actions with this board, and she did report a previous DUI on her initial application for licensure in 2012. The previous criminal conviction is being used as a DUI prior in this most recent case in the city of Mesa. I reached out. Two things have happened since the material has been put together. I did receive an email from RCP Vieira where she asked for this matter to be continued to the next meeting because the case in Mesa still has not been held. As a matter of fact, I talked to Mesa court staff. And the trial maintenance conference is set for June 27, 2018, and the jury trial is set for July 2nd. And the reason that had been continued again from the previous dates is because the officer is out on, it's not available, or out on some type of leave. So we still don't have a result from the criminal matter in the case, and that had been a reason for some previous postponements. She had mentioned that she might be here. That's why I was asking if she's going to be here today.
Okay. So we had in March, sent out a consent, and she didn't sign it, which is how we ended up at an informal. And now we've got we're at the point where she's requesting we postpone this until July. So, board members, what say you?
So she didn't sign the consent to pay the civil penalty. She didn't sign the consent to participate in the rehabilitative order.
Correct. She didn't sign anything.
And this is her second offense, correct? Her second DUI offense?
Second charge. She's not been convicted yet.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't hold that consent against her because that's actually pretty common when there's an ongoing case for them not to sign anything.
So, so I guess our decision is, do we postpone it to July like she'd asked, or do we make a decision based on the information we have right now? That's kind of where we're at, I think.
And she's not here, so your only decision at this point would be to move it to a formal hearing or to continue it at an informal for next month.
Okay. Right, because we can't do anything disciplinary because she's not here. Okay, so those are our choices.
I'm wishing to move it to a formal hearing.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. We have a motion and a second to go to a formal hearing. I think there's discussion because I see Frankie's face says there's discussion.
It's just as soon as you send it to hearing, I can't count on you on this anymore. So it kind of starts a whole ball rolling on my side for litigation. So, you know, I have to.
So
there's a lot of stuff to do between now and then. Yeah. So if you're going to go to a formal hearing, that's fine. I'm happy to do so. But moving it to an informal would allow me to still be your counsel. And for her to address the matter after the criminal matter is resolved, hopefully July 2nd.
And I feel like if we were to table it and keep it as an informal and handle it next month, assuming she's here, we'd still be able to mandate what it is we wanted as a consent. She just has to be here for that.
So, and speaking of which, if you don't mind, so hypothetically, if she were convicted of the second DUI, the court's going to treat it as a second conviction. And they're probably going to, and board member here, Shatberg, can you comment on that? We don't know what the outcome is, but if she is convicted, what else are we going to do?
Well, that's what I'm saying. What we wanted to offer as a consent, we will be able to mandate. Mm-hmm.
And that
if she's here.
Staff is concerned about the time with this. We need to get this case to resolution. If it languishes more, you know, we're going to be outside of our time frames to resolve the case. So,
what? I don't know where you're going with that.
Well,
I'm the only one who's lost.
I guess my question is, if there is a second conviction, you're going to mandate what, rehab?
That's what I wanted to make in some form.
Okay.
But if there is no conviction, because it was
if there is no conviction, then what would you want to do?
Well, but there's drugs on board too.
And I think there's.
Was there a drug? There was.
There was a prescription. There's prescriptions.
I'll phrase them with a prescription,
right.
But you can still be convicted of being under the influence. Even if you have
right, it just higher than the threshold.
So. I understand, Jack. I understand the concern of being outside the time frames, and there's always exceptions to every rule. And this case was delayed because of the delay in filing. If we have to go outside the time frames to get a just result, then I'm willing to do that.
Okay.
So we have a motion, right?
We have a motion.
Oh, so we're discussing. See, my preference would be to. Put this to the July meeting to see if there's a resolution. And then make a note to ourselves that we'll move it on at that point in time.
Give me that head nod if you agree.
Yeah.
So that's my discussion as far as moving it to a formal hearing.
No, I'll just withdraw my motion.
Who made the second?
I know.
Does he have to withdraw the second, or if the motion's gone, the second doesn't matter?
Yes, please, unless he plans to repropose the motion.
I'll withdraw myself.
Okay, so we're back to our original option, a formal, or postponing this until July, hoping to get resolution. Does anyone else have a motion?
I'll motion that we move this to July.
So we're moving it
formal in July.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on that?
So, just a question to the board and to the assistant attorney general. What happens if nothing happens with the criminal case between now and July?
Then we move it on. Then I agree, because my concern is the fact that she's been in contact with us, given the states, requested a reset. But if nothing happens at the next court date, then we're going to have to move on it.
Are you talking about if you dismiss it?
No, move it on.
If they don't, what if they postpone again? I think, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
What if they postpone again?
Because then we lose that
I think
30 days. So you're not looking at a hearing.
I'm only hesitant to move right to a formal because she has personally requested
a reset.
Hold it off till July. And as just a matter of practice, I know this board usually gives one continuance. This has been a really strange case because of the timeline of the Tempe Justice
System. Okay, if nothing happens between now and July, we still have the ability to move it on.
Absolutely.
That's correct.
Yes.
Right.
One of three things could happen next month. They could find her guilty, they could find her not guilty, or they could postpone.
So if we go to, we're going to lose at least 90 days on a hearing, because that still has to be set up for a court. So if we go to July, nothing happens in July to informal interview, then we have to do a hearing that will be scheduled for August, possibly September. You're looking at, that's just too long.
So, Frankie, my question is if we move this to an informal in July,
yes.
Do we have the authority to direct her to a rehabilitative order?
If she doesn't show up, you have to move it to a formal and have a hearing before you can order.
Right.
Anything.
You can't do discipline at the informal level if she's not here.
No.
Now, could we at that point ask her to waive the 30 days and have this taken care of in August?
Absolutely. it's her right to waive.
And if she's not here and there's been no resolution, we can't just automatically go to August. She still has to waive the 30-day notice.
Yes, she would. Otherwise, it would go in September. It's a 35-day notice period.
35, okay.
So I'm leaning going back to the original motion now, because what happens if she doesn't show up in July? Mm-hmm. We still are stuck in the same boat we're in now.
We can't give her an order.
We're still going to have to offer her a consent, which we've already done that.
You wouldn't have to offer her a consent.
If she's not here, we do.
Yeah.
Well, you would move it to informal if she doesn't show up.
Right, but
right.
Then that extends us out another period of time, right? So
35 days.
So we're looking at if we go the route of a formal hearing, this can be resolved in July. And if we go there, if we stay in an informal, we're not going to have resolution until September. That's really what we're looking at.
Yeah, July, if you do a hearing now, July is not going to happen.
Oh, it's not going to be July. It's going to
be
August.
It's your choice, August or September.
Right.
But
okay.
My hesitation is I have no idea how this case is going to come out based on the facts. While you are correct that if there are drugs on board, they still have to prove impaired to the slightest degree.
Right.
But who knows on a jury trial, because I've lost someone less.
That's right. It's a crapshoot.
It is a crapshoot. So I'm hesitant to, I'll say it this way, based on the facts I have in front of me right now, heading into a formal hearing, I'm not confident that this is a winnable case. So I'm more, based on the fact that she's requested a continuance, I guess I'm more amenable to waiting until July to find out the additional information that the court system would produce.
Okay. I'm going to go with the recommendation from our attorney.
Okay. So we have the motion. We have the second. Is there any further discussion? So all in favor of granting her request to keep this at the informal interview in the July meeting, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. That motion passed.
Tracy, who was the second on that?
You were the motion the second time, and Joe was the second.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let me just write my names. Hold on. Okay. All right, the board will now call the case of Kathy Wintergerst, KC 00385918-010821.
Chair, members of the board, this is case number C003859-18-010821 concerning a RCP Kathy Wintergerst. RCP Wintergerst has been licensed with us since 2013. License is currently set to expire in February 3rd, 2019. Her last reported employer was Kingman Regional Medical Center. We do not have a complaint history, and I was unable to find any prior criminal history on the case. RCP Wintergerst entered into a plea agreement in which she pled guilty to one count of aggravated DUI, which was a Class 4 felony. Records received from Maricopa County Clerk of the Superior Court indicate that RCP Wintergerst was arrested on December 1st, 2014 for two criminal counts of DUI and driving with a suspended license. The DPS Crime Lab reported RCP Wintergerst EAC at .261. RCP Wintergerst had been sentenced to 4 months in the Arizona Department of Corrections, which had started on August 9th of 2017, with 3 years probation, along with various reporting, counseling, costs, and fees because of the conviction. We have not received any report of the charges, and she's renewed her license two times since the original arrest without disclosing the arrest or the conviction. RCP Wintergerst is not providing written response to the initial complaint notification. She did call the office when the original complaint notification was sent to her. Staff provided details on the complaint process and allegations at issue. I believe we received some additional information since the since the initial filing. We received an email from her dated May 16th, 2018, where she states, it is my understanding that there is a hearing regarding my license. I am writing this to let you know that I will not be able to attend the meeting due to the circumstances moving out of state. With all due respect, I am begging the board to have mercy on me and consider my 35-year career as a respected respiratory therapist. I am guilty of the charges brought against me and regret what I have done in the past. I have changed my life and continue to try to make amends for my mistakes. I am begging all of you to please not take my career from me, as this is all I know and love to do. I have been sober now for over 3 years and continue to take random drug testing every month and meet with my probation officer on a monthly basis. I humbly ask you to take this into consideration and determine your decision. I would do anything if the board asked me and continue my career. Thank you for your time. I don't have anything further unless the board has any questions.
Okay, thank you.
Does she have an active license now?
She does.
But she does not live in state.
I have the information that we received from her states that indicates that she is out of state. However, I have not been able to confirm where she's living or where she's working right now. We had received some information that she might have been working at a small regional hospital in the Mojave Valley area. However, I've been unable to get any response from them or contact them whether she's working there. The other factors in the case are that she either has or has held a Colorado license, and some of the information in her original application places her in Colorado. So she may be there practicing in Colorado.
Did we get any mail returned? So whatever address she provided to us on her record, never did any of that come back? Or she's obviously communicated somehow, but I don't know the USPS if that's come back. I didn't see anything here which would indicate that anything came back.
I'd like to just check the physical file, make sure that I don't miss a scan.
She was arrested in 2014.
But not charged till 2016.
I don't have any returned mail at that address.
Okay. I was just curious.
No.
Okay. So whatever address we have, she gets mail there, or whoever's there keeps it, or something of that nature. Yeah.
So she was charged in 2016 and convicted in 2017.
Correct.
It's interesting when licensees make a statement in her written response back. You know, please don't take my career away from me. As in, there's an accountability or responsibility on behalf of the licensee that I didn't choose to drive drunk. That was their decision.
Yeah, probably should have thought of that before you got behind the wheel at 0.26.
Yeah.
So what are our options at this point?
You can move this to a formal hearing. You can dismiss it. You can file a letter of concern. You can offer a consent agreement. You can table it.
Well, we know the outcome. We know the outcome.
Yes. This is different.
I mean, she
went
to prison.
One.
Right. It is different.
It is different.
Yeah.
But we can't do anything disciplinary right now because she's not here.
You would have to send this one to a
formal
hearing.
Which we would send her a letter. It wouldn't have reopened it. She wouldn't get it.
Well, there's been no mail returned.
She's been responsive.
And she's been responsive, yeah. She's responded at least in emails.
And we send everything regular, certified, and by email.
So
she's
so three different ways?
We send everything three different ways.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll move that we set this to a formal.
Second. We have a motion and a second to go to a formal hearing. Any discussion? All in favor of moving the case of Kathy Wintergers to a formal hearing, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. That motion passes.
This is second. Thank you.
And the board will call the case of Patricia Judge, case C003862-18-001604.
Is RCP Judge here?
It's funny because sometimes everyone's here.
Chair, members of the board, this is case number C003862-18-001604 concerning RCP Patricia Judge. She's been licensed with us since 1996, and the license is current. I'm not sure. I want to double check the expiration date on that. This case, her last employer was Professional Respiratory Care Services. I could not find a complaint history and did not find any other criminal history on PACER. RCP judge tested positive for marijuana on pre-employment drug screen. And that was because she was going to a travel assignment, and that was canceled because of the positive hit on the drug screen. RCP judge responded to the initial complaint allegation within the required time frame and states that she did test positive for marijuana and will, of course, regret this for the rest of her life. In addition, RCP judge states that come August on my birthday, I was not going to renew my license and retire out of a long, rewarding career. So I would have to double check to see if she filed a license renewal since the writing of the original report, that she may have allowed her license to lapse.
That's not until August.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was it August? I thought it was April.
No, August.
Okay. So she does have a current license, but it's set to expire in August. I don't have anything further.
Test positive on a drug screen. Mm-hmm. You have no reason to test positive on a drug screen.
Right. I'm going to let my license lapse in August. It's not a reason.
I don't know if you'd like to exercise your executive session, but I do have some guidance.
Sounds like we would. Definitely we should.
So I motion that we go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor of going into executive session, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion passes. I think we leave for executive session, right?
Yeah.
They stay, we leave.
So members in the audience, boards voted to go into executive session. It's a closed session where they get legal advice from their attorney. They're also going to take a restroom break for 5 minutes, so I need everybody to exit the room. We'll let you know when we go back into open session. Please take any person's backpack with you. And it'll probably be...
Okay,
we're
ready. We are back in session. We haven't gotten to any discussion yet, have we?
No.
We just called the case and Jack
Frankie
said
jumped right
okay,
in.
Okay, all right. Okay, board members.
So, in my inclination here is a letter of concern, and the reason, I mean, she's really offered no defense to this. She hasn't let us know anything. She just says she was regretting it or something, and that was it. I'm sorry, and mea culpa. So, I'll move that we issue a letter of concern for the use of marijuana.
And the board is concerned that?
You've tested positive on a pre-employment drug screen for marijuana.
Okay, so we have a motion.
I'll second.
We have a second. We have a motion and a second for a letter of concern.
Non-disciplinary,
yes. Any conversation, any discussion? All in favor of the letter of concern, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes. Okay, it looks like those are our cases, and we will move to R4, which is discussion and action on the Executive Director's Report.
Can we go to the discussion on the policy? Yes. Can we go to item number 3 under the Executive Director's Report? It's the long-awaited, long-overdue draft policy on failing to respond to an initial complaint with the board.
So it's number three, which is really the second.
It's two, part two.
And it's page 1670 for anyone who needs a page number.
So I think what the board needs to look at on the policy is the penalties associated with a first violation versus a multiple violation. And I think, Jack, when we talked about this, you wanted to clarify that this is only for the initial, responding to an initial allegation. It doesn't affect informal interviews or formal hearings. There is no mandate to respond to an informal interview request, and the penalty for ignoring a formal hearing response is a motion to deem the allegations committed.
This is strictly on the initial allegations.
Mm-hmm. You get that initial letter that the board has opened up an investigation into professional conduct. You have 20 days to respond, and that's if they don't respond.
So if I have no previous violations, I get a letter of concern. If there are previous violations, there's a civil penalty.
Or other disciplinary action at your disposal.
Okay.
One of the things that's on the next page that we were talking about is technically a failure to respond is a new violation. So, you know, licensee X shows up today. They want to come talk to you, but they never filed a response within the 20 days. If that's the case, based on the allegations that you plan to dismiss, you can do so and then direct your staff to open up a new complaint on a failure to respond. And then you would, at the next phase, be able to issue a letter of concern or the civil penalty. If you move that case on to an informal or a formal, we should be able to work that new allegation into the next notice, because it really comes down to whether or not they were noticed of that allegation. So the initial, obviously, if they show up, they haven't been noticed with enough time to tell them that they're one of the allegations is that they didn't respond. So that's procedurally a little confusing, but probably how we're
going to
work process. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
And what are we classifying a response as?
So I did look into that because Board Member O'Hara Schattenberg had asked whether or not response is usually a term of art within the legal community. There's nothing that tells you exactly how or what you have to receive, so the board can.
So an email is acceptable.
Yeah, an email would be acceptable, a telephone call, so long as you know your investigator is taking notes on the call, a letter or an actual kind of written, formal written response would work. The only definition I could find is, as far as, you know, civil court and criminal court, is an answer with a capital A, where you actually have to have a format. Yours is a lot less.
Is that a verifiable email address from the respondent, or just a, you know?
That is probably something that we should put into the policy on what is considered a proper response to an allegation. So whether it's formal or informal, electronic or handwritten or mailed in, a verifiable email address is probably a really good idea that it's coming from.
You have to be able to verify that that, in fact, is the person.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Trying to reach. I mean,
and we've had cases where other people, I think, have tried to email things in other email addresses we didn't recognize. They were using their wife's email, and
that person.
Right. Mm-hmm. We couldn't tell if it was them or if it was their spouse.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so are we looking for a motion, or are you just showing this to us?
I would like a motion. In a vote, I want you to know that we tried to cover all the bases. We didn't cover a verifiable email address. We have to change some internal procedures. So all of our initial complaint allegation notice letters are now going to go out by certified mail. regular mail and email. The only way we can prove this or take a letter of concern, in my mind, is to make sure that they've gotten notice at their address of record. Whether or not that address of record is correct,
right, that's on that.
We sent to where we need to be, and that's the first step of determining whether or not they needed to respond.
By approving this, Jack, does this enable you to take action without bringing it to the board?
No.
No.
No, this is, so a little background on this is we had a Senate Bill 13, we had several statutory changes. One of them was we now require a response to our initial allegations to get their side of the story. Since that time, since that change in statute, we've had several cases come up. And I think Board Member O'Hara Shatner was voting on that, hey, if this happens at the state bar, this is what happens when you don't respond to something. Your license is going to get suspended or whatever it was. So then we got into discussion of consistency. Well, we're seeing this more and more. What do we do with this allegation now that we can take action for failing to respond? This policy has been to address that so that we're consistent from here on out. Somebody doesn't respond to a complaint out, initial complaint letter. They're looking at least a letter of concern. Hey, don't let this happen again. And then if it happens again in the future, there's an escalation and progressive discipline up to informal interview for disciplinary action or some other action.
So there's no fine with the first violation.
Is that
there's no
correct.
Fine.
No.
Fine.
Not
and there may not be a fine for the second violation either. It says or disciplinary action, including probation, et cetera.
If the board, so this was my, we looked at least two or three other boards and what they do. So I didn't know if you wanted to issue a civil penalty for failing to respond to an initial allegation. The difference between a letter of concern and civil penalty is you can issue a letter of concern at an initial allegation stage.
Mm-hmm.
And civil penalties, I think,
informal or formal.
Informal or formal. So that's where I ended up leaning. If you want a civil penalty, $25, $100, whatever, now's the time. You're setting this policy. This is going to carry on for many years. Probably outlast us. Kind of a deal. So you're setting a new policy for the industry. If you don't respond to a complaint, this is what you're looking at. So, yeah, so you should think if you want to issue a civil penalty instead of a letter of concern, now's the time to be thinking about it.
I think what you have here seems appropriate to me. I would like to see language in there regarding the confirmation of
verifiable
email. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I would like that too.
Thank you.
I mean, we've had
too
cases.
Many ways of doing that.
And so,
work.
Is it the board's direction that you want this to be a written response from the verifiable mailing address or email address?
Yes.
Yes.
And that would help, I think, if you don't want to accept verbal responses.
Yeah. Right.
I think
that's right.
Makes a little murky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you're reporting all your
somebody
calls.
Somebody may come in and say, well, I called and then I cursed Jack out and that was the end of it.
Right.
Okay, well, that's not really a response.
Well, I would take
those. Well, with those changes, I'd like to make a motion that we approve.
I have a motion and a second for approval of this draft with the changes noted. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. And that motion passes.
Thank you very much.
What else you got,
Jeff? Budget. So we're at the end of the fiscal year. The end of this month is the end of fiscal year 2018. Right now, as of today, we're probably going to be between 5 and 10% under budget, which is about what the financial gurus at AUA and everybody else want to hear. The total appropriation, I think, was about $325,000 for last fiscal year. Starting on July 1st, our new budget starts, so I included the numbers in your packets for 2018 and 2019. So fiscal year 2019, which starts on July 1st, our appropriations have gone down a little, and that's essentially because we had a special line item from for the percentage of cases that had increased a year and a half ago. That's no longer there. Part of that line item was replaced by funding for the new e-licensing system. So our appropriation level for 2019 is $323,000. That's everything. That's staff, operating expenditures, all that kind of thing. Of that, I think there's about $17,000 to $19,000 that is earmarked for the licensing system. The e-license, let me talk about that. That's another item on it. Does anybody have any questions
I
about
do.
The budget?
On the what we have here on page 1668 says FY19 approved is $314,000. Am I looking at a different number than you are?
Probably.
It says the FY18 estimate is $323,000.
Okay, I missed. What Adrian?
1668.
Also says 4.0 full-time equivalent position.
That's 6.
Oh,
I apologize. So I was off. You're right. So I was quoting the this year's fiscal numbers. The total appropriation for 2019 is 314.
Okay.
So I believe there's about 17,000 that's earmarked for e-licensing. I can get you an exact number.
It's
17,600. Thank you.
Jack, you indicate that it's 4 FTE positions.
And you're reading, so what you're reading from is OSPB. The agency has been appropriated 4 FTEs since I got here. We've never had 4 FTEs filled. We've always been at 3. Three and maybe an intern or a staff member. So I have hesitated to change it because once you lose that FTE with OSPB and the legislature, you're not going to get it back unless you start breaking arms and legs and arms. So we have 4 appropriated. The money that's in personal services is for 4 FTEs, but current levels as far as salary and so forth cover, start eating into the vacancy savings of the 4 position.
Okay.
So.
All right, good. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that.
What did I say I was going to talk about?
E-licensing.
The e-licensing system for the majority of 13 boards went live on April 26th. We were not one of those agencies that went live. There's several reasons that we didn't. We have a current e-licensing system that's working fine. The new system, they had some trouble with migrating data from our current database into the new Salesforce database. That really didn't get resolved until late last week. I think it was Wednesday or Thursday. They finally got complaints loaded, disciplinary actions loaded, and then also the disciplinary check marks that are supposed to be highlighted on our website. I haven't checked all that data, but I think we're going to be end up going live by July 1st, within the next week or so. I've also had some delay with some of the testers that are testing the system, but we won't get into specifics on that. But we have a couple people that are testing the system. Current board members, old board members, to give me feedback on what's working, what's not working. So the testing of that is not quite done yet, but we have made changes because of some of the feedback we've gotten already. So once this thing goes live, there's a couple things that are happening. The two major things, and the board really has not had a discussion on this, the two major things that could be happening are, number one, there's a set of eligibility questions for new applicants. So new graduates or people that are coming in from out of state, if they are not eligible to receive the license, i.e. they don't have an RRT credential in hand, they are not going to be able to apply for a license. So that's a big change, and we'll probably try to get a notice out to the schools and so forth about that.
That is going to be a huge change.
Yeah.
For the schools specifically.
It's going to be a change in that you have, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anybody who lets their CRT expire.
What's that?
Yeah. Anybody who uses CRT who lets their license expire.
Right. Right. So the current policy is that anybody, exactly, you're not going to be able to apply for a new license if you don't have your RRT credentials. So if you're going through the eligibility questions on e-licensing, you don't have an RRT, you're not going to be allowed to apply.
Right. So where in the past several months or years, schools have been applying before they were graduates, that stops now.
Right.
Okay.
The idea behind the way we were doing it was that fingerprint background check was taking too long, mm-hmm. 30, 35 days to get that done. So we let people apply early so that hopefully they all matched up, so when they got their RRT credential, they could get licensed right away. I'm going to suggest another change with fingerprint, so I'll close that loop in a second. The second thing with e-licensing is that we had talked about requiring all the CEs to be submitted, all the right CEs to be submitted before you renew your license. This system is going to allow for that. This system is going to ask for everybody to type in what CEs they did, how many hours they got for it, and then it's going to mandate that people update scans of their continuing education certificates.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Staff has already, Kathy rewrote a deficiency letter, so if anybody applies for a renewal and they don't have the right CE, we have a deficiency letter that's getting ready to get sent out. Thank you, we got deficiency letters just like the initial applications. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your renewal application. You don't have your 3 hours of your 2 hours of ethics. They're not going to get their license renewed until they get that certificate to us. So we're going to, staff is taking on the project and making sure you have your 20 hours before you get renewed. Continuing education audits have gotten a lot better for 20 hours. Now that we've added the ethics, everybody's scrambling to get ethics and doesn't have it. So the next batch of audits that you see in July, which is about 23 or 26, all failed the audit.
Right. What was the grace period that they could use either?
It was 6 months. So this originally became effective July 1st of last year.
Yeah.
We gave we sent out correspondence to everybody, posted on our website, 6 month grace period where you can renew under either set of rules.
Right.
Starting January 1st, you have to have the new education according to the new rules. Mm-hmm. This is the first audit of the first quarter of 2018 where we're now enforcing those rules. And the audit response is not good.
Do you have any idea how many? I didn't know we had to have that sort of in here.
So, mm-hmm. As far as continuing education audits go, we're getting rid of them. You have to have your CE, your 20 hours done the right way before you renew your license.
Excellent.
So those folks out there that wait to the last day or the last minute to renew their license, and they file an application and they don't have their 20 hours, they're not going to have a license to work.
Good.
So, we'll do our best to notify, but everybody that's waiting the last minute, and if they don't have the right CE, they're not going to get renewed. They're not going to be there for that Monday morning shift. But they'll be calling us Saturday and Sunday going, mm-hmm. Well, where's my license renewed?
And it's going to increase the amount of people that are basically working without a license.
Right.
It has potential, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So those are the two new things with the e-licensing system that I think would have the most impact that you all are going to hear about. Well, why did you do this? Mm-hmm. It's stupid. And and all that kind of stuff. So, FYI. Okay? I expect that to start within the next week or so. It'll be a better system a year down the road, but right now there's a lot of stuff that staff is learning, and a lot of things that need to be perfected as far as the instructions on the website and that sort of thing.
So will that be linked to the board website?
Yeah. So as far as the website's concerned, it should be seamless. So when you go to our website and you hit the renew my license, you're going to get directed to the new e-licensing website. It has a little different look and feel, but it's going to have a new login with security codes. It's a little more sophisticated, so if you forget about your password, it'll allow you to reset it, that sort of thing. Hopefully it's pretty... What other codes do you have on there?
Well, what happens if... When we first tried it, I clicked on the new licensee, and it allowed me to apply for a new license even though I already have one.
Right.
Has that been fixed?
Yes.
Okay.
So one of the functionality things was the layout of the website, when you initially logged on, it was not apparent that you were there to renew your license. We've added a pop-up window. So if somebody clicks on that new license application tab, mm-hmm. there's a pop-up loop. Hey, if you're renewing your license, this is the wrong place to be.
Perfect.
Okay.
That was the wrong place.
So, and then it'll direct you back to the renewal.
And it charged me.
They also added configuration that you're not going to get a second license of the same type and kind.
Perfect. Okay.
So, and then Chuck Ramirez is another person. He was a former board member whose license is coming up for renewal. So he was, and Chuck is great at telling me what he thinks and what he likes and what he doesn't like, which is good, which is what I need going through the system. So he's been helping out also and has some good suggestions too. Okay. I don't have anything else on the new licensing unless you have questions on it. There's going to be frustrated people with the new system, but we're just going to have to work through it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we can probably do some outreach on it. Budgets.
Application report.
Kathy, can you do your report, please?
Since you were already inquiring about the audit numbers for this first quarter, we audited 56 people. The passed were 33. The failed were 23. And out of that 23, 5 never responded. So, like Jack said, it was all because basically because they didn't have ethics or they didn't have their live hours.
That's what I was going to ask. Okay.
They're like, we didn't know. We didn't know there was a new requirement. You know, which
I've heard that a lot.
Yep.
I didn't know.
Hear that a lot. So a lot of people are focusing on ethics. They kind of forget about live, and they kind of forget that you can only do one of PALS or NPR or ACLS. You know, you can only do one of them now. You know, you can't submit all two or all three of them. So that's kind of where some of them got a little stuck too. So that's the information on audits. As far as the application report goes, you probably saw that our numbers were up a little bit. We have 122 that are pending right now, and this month we went ahead and we actually issued 58 certificates. Fee waiver applications, there were 7, of which only 2 were approved. The other ones were not eligible. Late applications pending, there's 2. The late applications that were approved were 7. The ones that we closed as far as applications was, at least for the 210 days, the 7 months, was 10 people got closed. And with the 60 days who had late renewals and they didn't finish their response, 3 of them were actually closed, and there was one who didn't want to play anymore. So, yeah, just didn't want to go on with the process. He realized he didn't have an RRT. Mm-hmm. So, and with regards to our time frame report, again, we had 52 licenses that were issued. And with our completeness time frame, we're supposed to do it within 15 days. We're at 1. With the substantive review time frame, we are supposed to do that within 90. We are at 1. And the overall time frame, which is 105 days, we are at 2. With regards to the late licenses that were issued, there were 7. And the completeness time frame is 7 days. We are at 1. For the substantive review time frame, we have 60 days, we're at 1. And the overall time frame, which is 67 days, we're at 2.
Yeah, huge improvement on that.
And that's it.
All right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Next item, I included, we don't necessarily have to vote on this today, but I would, if you do have some time, I'd appreciate if you went in and took a look at the draft rules. So we have a draft rule package that it's time for us to submit. Some of the things that are happening in this draft rule package are we're writing rules from Senate Bill 1300. These got drafted about 6 months ago, and I just haven't gotten to the point of going forward with Secretary of State's getting them filed. There's a couple of new things in here. So if you guys can, if you have the time, you can take a look at it and have some comments, feedback prepared for next meeting, that would be great. We're adding a late renewal fee. This is from the legislation. So if you do submit a late renewal fee, you're going to be paying a late, an additional fee for filing it late. There's language on chemical dependency treatment programs. Right now we're doing a lot of it by policy, but the rule is going to set up some language for how we handle those. We're essentially, eventually I want to get rid of the fingerprint card. And the reason for that is we have a couple other health-related agencies that have the fingerprint clearance card. There's no reason for us to be doing a separate background check. We can actually reduce fees to our customers by eliminating that.
Nice.
So what I don't know is whether or not they have to have a fingerprint clearance card throughout the entire year or just when they apply or renew their license. One of the advantages of the fingerprint clearance card is that if and when somebody gets arrested, we, the board, get notified of that automatically through the Department of the Board of Fingerprinting. So we would have constant updates on anybody that has been arrested, charged, that sort of thing, whether or not somebody reports it to us. Because otherwise, we don't know, and it may not get reported to us until a renewal application. So that's in here. We've made some general changes on language changes to conform with the statute. The other thing I'd like to do is eliminate license verifications from other states. Right now, that's one of the bigger delays with our new application process, is that if you've been licensed in another state, we require license verification, and some people have been licensed in 5 to 10 different states. That's an additional expense, additional time to get licensed here. And we want to try to reduce that by replacing license verifications with a report out of the National Practitioner Data Bank. National Practitioner Data Bank is the federal repository for interdisciplinary functions. So we can eliminate a large house of new applications if we go to that query. So that's proposed in this rule. And you're going to see some comments in this draft from our rule writer that I haven't necessarily got back to her on.
Well, just at first glance, you need to change the address in number 4, right? Because we moved.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, the I actually think I already did that in the original that I have, but let's see. Okay, I think I'm pretty much. I know that I did that in the one that the draft I'm working at.
All right.
So yes, we can make sure we change the draft because that's where we're going to have the initial public rules hearing. They have to have the right address for that.
They do.
So you want us to review these, Jackie?
I want you to review and get back. If you have questions, let me know. But maybe by the next board meeting, we can actually get a consensus or a vote to move it forward.
I can't just send you an emoji with a thumbs up. Or
you can, as long as it's the right emoji. Absolutely. So that's a draft. So, and also, because we're doing rules, if you think of things that we don't have currently in our rules, now's the time to add them in. So that's a little assignment between now and next month. So again, okay. Any questions or rules? Okay. The last Auditor General follow-up report. It starts on page 1701. This is the response. So we had our performance review audit back in 2016. It was finalized in 2017. The Auditor General comes in, checks to see that we're doing what we said we're going to do, and also asks for updates on things that were not yet implemented. This is our response to the Auditor General's office. It's already been sent to them, but I wanted to provide you with a copy of it. They're going to be in the office next week to ask questions and audit, investigate, to make sure that we've done what we're supposed to have done. One of the major things in the audit was continuing education. So we've shown them statistics of what we've done, and we basically told them, hey, you know what, we're getting rid of audits. Everybody has to send us 20 hours prior to having a license renewed. So hopefully that answers the question. I included some screenshots from the new e-licensing system in their response that shows them how to enter the continuing education, that sort of thing. So this is our response. They're coming in the office next week to follow up on it. They will have another report and update that will be available to the board within the next couple months. The reason they're doing it now is because if there are any findings or we haven't done something, they want to have it those things ready for the next legislative session, which starts in January, but there will be joint legislative audit committee meetings that happen in November, December of this year. So if we haven't done something, we'll end up in a joint legislative review prior to the next legislative session.
Do you need us to do anything?
Not at this point in time.
Okay.
Not really, but you know, not at this point in time. I think staff has responded to them adequately. We'll find out whether or not after they get done with the review.
Okay.
Any questions?
No.
Last thing is 1436. You want to talk to them at all on this?
Sure. So Senate Bill 1436, and there's a copy in your materials, will become law on August 3rd, I believe. And basically it took the existing 13904, which talked about ex-convicts that have had their rights restored, that they can apply for licenses, and that a felony conviction in and of itself doesn't block them from holding a license with the state. There's like other rules in there, but basically they took out a bunch of language. So now it applies to anybody with a conviction on their history. So not just those who have had their rights restored. It's anyone with a felony conviction can apply to the boards for a license, and you can't disqualify them unless what they were convicted of specifically had something to do with the position they're going to hold. With that in mind, they've now, under 1436, have added a 41-1093-04, which makes it a little bit stranger, because under the 13904,
you could stop somebody from holding a license if they were convicted of a crime that had basically gave them an opportunity to reoffend or would encourage them to reoffend or had anything to do with the position they'll hold. But under this new 41-1093, they can basically petition a board at any time before they even start their education. If they plan to someday hold a license with that board, they can ask the board to make a determination now on whether or not their criminal history would prevent them from holding a license. Under this new statute, the catch is that you have to prove by clear and convincing evidence, which is, you know, a step higher than preponderance, but a step lower than reasonable doubt. You have to prove by clear and convincing evidence that just holding the license would lead to reoffense. And that's a really nearly impossible standard to show that somebody just by virtue of holding that license would reoffend by clear and convincing evidence, because it's all speculation. So as of right now, I don't know how the petition is going to work, whether or not there needs to be a formal process and it needs to be put on an agenda, or if it's something at a staff level that can be, you know, approved pursuant to policy. We don't know these answers yet. We have a team in my office that is working on coming up with kind of a standard for how to go about should somebody petition a board to ask whether or not they would ever be able to hold a license.
But we can still be the final determining factor, right?
You're always the final determining factor.
Okay. I mean, with your input, I mean, we can still make that determination.
So this board has not, as long as I've been here, and I've been here almost 4 years, this board has never denied anybody a license based on a criminal history, just on the history alone.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this is going to be a huge concern. It's really just going to come down to if somebody who's interested in possibly getting their AA, you know, becoming a respiratory therapist, doesn't want to spend that type of money and time knowing that they're never going to get a license with this board.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reasonable question to bring in front of the board. I think right now it's more procedurally, how do we deal with this? I mean, we're talking about they're going to have to go through 2 years of schooling, testing, application. So does a decision the board makes now in 2018 still stand in 2020 when the person actually does apply?
Right.
Are you bound by that decision? Like, how will the board hold those decisions? Are you going to have a special file for that person? Are you going to have to start creating application files for students? There are a lot of questions regarding this, so we're still looking into it, but we still have about another month and a half before this kicks in. So
an individual convicted of a felony who does not have their rights restored,
mm-hmm.
could, under this statute, could
mm-hmm.
apply for a license.
Yes.
After August 3rd.
Wow.
I couldn't believe that's what they took out. Yes, they struck out the sentence that says, nor shall a person whose civil rights have been restored be disqualified. They just want anyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You just can't disqualify anybody with a criminal history is what it comes down to, unless you can show by reason of the prior conviction of a felony or misdemeanor, if the offense has a reasonable relationship to the functions of employment.
So they can't vote,
they can
work. But you can have a license.
You can work. It's the whole right to work movement. So, and you know, I think that Koch brothers. This was based on a study released that was financed, I think, by the Koch brothers. That actually said that people with reliable income sources from work were less likely to reoffend than somebody who didn't have a reliable, you know, source of pride in a job that they can call a career.
And we're not the only state moving this
direction. No, a lot of the states are moving in this direction. So, you know, as I said, this board, in my history, has never denied a license just based on a criminal history alone. So.
Thank you.
And it's not uncommon that the board gets called and asked by students,
oh, sure. mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I have this in my background.
Mm-hmm. Am I going to be able to get a license?
You know, am I going to be able to get a license? And
yep.
we have to tell them, well,
we don't
you know, stay out of trouble now and just be honest on your application.
Mm-hmm.
So, but
okay.
it's a philosophy.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. We will move to R5, which is call to the public, and the call to the public is if anybody out in the audience would like to address the board, you would have 5 minutes to do so, but we cannot have any conversation with you because it would not be on the agenda. However, that is an option that's open to you. Anyone? Anyone?
Did you enjoy the meeting?
Right, this is the time we usually say, what'd you get out of this?
Very interesting. I liked it.
Well, thank you, sir.
Any insights out there?
Learned a lot.
And you guys are getting the ethics thing?
I've got a question. All these rules changes, proposed rule changes, et cetera, are these going to be mailed to us, our address, so that we can keep it together? And because, you know, there's some punitive actions going on here, and out of some slight, we may do some actions that would land us here.
Yeah, so good question. As far as, like, email the actual rules package to you, no, not necessarily. What we've done in the past is I've blasted email to every email address that we have saying we have proposed rules. And the rules process is a very open public process. So if you have comments on whether or not you think rules are good or bad, that's the time to let us know. So I email it out to everybody. It's posted on our website. And then if we do have new rules, we try to do the same thing. We try to email everybody that, hey, we have new rules. Here's where you can find them. And even sometimes we'll put it on renewal notices. So that's our methodology of communication. If you want current events, anytime you go to our website, there's a couple panes that kind of flash across the top. That will have news, that will have proposed rules, that sort of thing. So that's also a good source. But actually mailing like this packet, no, we're not necessarily
rules.
We do our best to get the word out.
Just make sure your emails and addresses are up to date because that is the primary way that the board gets a hold of everybody is by email. So just make sure everything's up to date on the file. You should be getting a blast. And if you do want to get them, we'll mail them on the website. So.
Does that answer your question? We try to do the best job we can, but I know that an email amongst several hundred or thousand paper email may not be very identifiable. So anytime you go in one information, you go to the website, it should be there on the first page. Okay.
How far in the advance do you have to
mail
out the reapply for or get your renewal?
So right now it's 60 days.
Okay. And at that time, do you have to show all your CEs? Is that what I'm hearing?
You're going to have to, within the next week or two, but if you apply for license, you're going to have to tell us all the 20 hours that you have in the right categories, and then you're going to have to enter scans of your continuing education certificates so that we can check them and make sure you have the right 20 hours before we renew your license.
What if you don't have access to scanning? Does everybody have access to scanning at home?
So if you don't have access to scanning, you're going to get a deficiency letter that says you need to provide proof of your continuing education, and then you can send it in by hard copy, email, take a picture of it with your phone and send it in. But you will have the opportunity to send it in if you can't do it online.
Now, my question is, the last time I renewed, I came here and presented my CEUs. Can I still do that?
Always. If you still want to apply by paper, you're welcome to do that. You know, we can make copies or scans of your certificates, that sort of thing. So, absolutely.
With the CEU change, do we still need to retain them for 5 years?
Yes.
The new one rule is 5 years. Even electronically, we're going to.
Yes. Yeah, we're not.
Will the upload?
Yeah, so
no,
it's a good question. So the records retention policy that we're going to, this is more of the administrative side of things. Our record retention policy is going to be, after you renew your license, we're destroying your scans because of the size of the memory that we have to purchase for the system. We can't be a depository for CE, so. We're going to get your CE, we're going to look at it, confirm it, And eventually, whatever the records retention is, it will be. So. Does that answer your question? Good questions. Any other good questions out there?
So since you're not retaining them, we can't notify you of our CEs prior to renewal.
That's
so
correct.
If we take them, we can't.
That's correct. We're not set up like NDRC or AERC where we're going to, you can go in and see a transcript 2 years down the road. So a lot of people call us right now because they're renewing their NDRC credential. Hey, last time I renewed, I sent in copies of my CE, and unfortunately, we're just not set up to keep that, give it back to you so that you can give it to NDRC or another state. So, yes, it's important that you keep that stuff, keep the documentation in a folder. The other thing is that we're hearing a lot of, and pipe in, Kathy, if you have anything to add, people are getting their CE from websites. And then they get audited, or 6 months, a year down the road, they go back to get that certificate from the website, and the website hasn't retained it, or the website's even no longer in existence. So if I had any other suggestion, it would be when you get your CE, make sure you get that paper certificate, go old school, put it in a folder like you do with some of your tax stuff, and keep it, because it could be important to you down the road. It's a suggestion. I'm not even good at keeping copies of my tax stuff, so I get it. Okay. What else? Anything else?
Yeah, at the end. Okay. So anything for R6 items for future agendas?
We're going to bring the rules
soon,
right? Yes.
All right, so Kathy has the list of people who signed in for CEUs. Are you calling names, Kathy? Okay. I'm getting ready to adjourn the meeting, but we need to make sure you are still here from the beginning of the meeting. So once she calls your name, you will then receive your CEU credits. So let's go through that real quickly.
Ron Norton. Harry Lippman.
Here.
Alma Carrillo.
Here.
Louis Coyne.
Right here.
Ashley McKay.
Here.
Okay, thank you. Marguerite Yoder.
Here.
John Witter. Deidre Brown. Amber Fishen.
Here.
Amar.
Here.
Thank you. Erlinda Diaz Lopez.
Here.
Mardine Bowers. Ray Espinoza. Nancy Brown.
Here.
Rachel Hatch. Letitia Calloway. Monica.
Here.
Thank you. Jasmine Huntley. Okay, I'll just put a question mark next to it, and we will double-check it before we put it on your certificate.
Okay, thank you.
Angela Gibbons. Liam Samuelson.
Right here.
Okay. Jenny Baker. Kyle Atkin.
Here.
And Linda Pickett.
Here.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Okay,
you came in late.
Right, you guys shut the door now.
All right.
Are you going to adjourn?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to say thank you for coming down. So staff is available if you have questions at any time, and keep up the good work out there. Your jobs are very important, and we want to support that as much as we can.
And we are adjourned at 11:14.